Blog Talk Radio.
Wednesday morning to each and every one of you, my listeners, and it is indeed a glorious day here in New Milford, because for those of you who are not part of the Northeast region, you all know that we got a visit from Sandy, and we here in New Milford, where I'm broadcasting from this morning, we have a lot to celebrate and to be grateful for, because there has not been too much devastating things that happened to us. Here in New Milford, a few trees are down. I'm told one of my friends had damage to her attic and to her deck. But overall, we have a lot to be thankful for. I especially am so grateful for this day, because all that's in my yard are leaves, fall leaves. I did not even have dry branches on the ground. So for that, I gave thanks. I give thanks. I prayed for protection, and I got protection. And yesterday morning when I went outside, and look, I saw just one little section of my neighbor's fence that came off. I guess the nail didn't hold it too sturdy. So it falls off. And I tell you, that's a tip in the bucket to what other people are going through. So to all the people in my network from New Jersey and Maryland and New York, my prayers go to you guys. And for those people who has lost loved ones, there is nothing that I can say than to say, I'm sending you a virtual hug. You're in my prayers. And yes, this too shall pass. Just hold on to the sweet memories of your loved ones. And for those who have lost material things, you know, once we have life, we can get those things back. So just give thanks, and your loved ones who you are with, just embrace them and let them know how much you love them and how much you appreciate them. Don't take the devastation of what you have lost to get into the midst of the relationship with your loved ones. We have a powerful lineup for you this morning. We have three dynamite women. Oh, and counting me is four. So four amazing women in one conversation. So I'm telling you, grab all the things you need to use to get notes, because you are going to be able to get a lot of insights. I want to, before I go into the task for today, I want to let you know the chat room is up and running, and The telephone number that you need to call to be involved in this dialogue is 646-915-8166. And I am going to read from my latest book, Celebrating 365 Days of Gratitude. John Milton says, gratitude bestows reverence, allowing us to encounter everyday epiphanies, those transcendent moments of awe that change forever how we experience life and the world. Isn't that the truth? And a submission from Susan Brownell, the gratitude circle. I love circles. Circles are great because they never end. For best circles, you start with something good and end with something good. You want to keep a good thing going. Take cancer caregivers. They are a very good thing. They start the circle. They care for others. Those they care for may not be able to do much to keep the circle going, but we can. We can express our gratitude and live our gratitude by keeping the gratitude circle going. Even though we may not give direct care to loved ones with cancer, we can help support and encourage these caregivers. November is National Caregivers Month. It is the time to express gratitude to those who compassionately care for others. It is a time to reflect on the sacrifices made by caregivers. It is also a time to recognize that those caregivers need some compassion from us as they freely give to others. It is a time to support them in any way possibly so that they can know our gratitude and renew themselves. We can keep the circle of gratitude going through our words and our actions. Circles of gratitude, they are two very good things. And that's the truth, especially with the aftermath of Sandy. We have so much gratitude to express, and we need to help to encourage others who really don't see the result that they are now experiencing as a means of giving gratitude. But I'm here to tell you, once you have life, you can recoup everything else. So again, to be involved in this conversation this morning, remember to call into 646-915-8166. I have my first honored guest hanging out in the virtual green room with me, and I'm going to bring her on momentarily. My first guest is Miss Tanisha Barnes. I'm going to bring her on in a few minutes. So get ready to be ignited and to get involved. I also want to remind you that I am launching a reinvention mom brand, if you may. And I want you to visit DaphneClarkHudsonEmpowers.com. Insert your email there, share it with your friends, and this way you will be informed of the new launch so you can come there and shop away for all the holiday that's coming up, that you can just shop for empowered gifts that you can pass on to your loved one, because we all need to reinvent who we are. Again, I'm super excited about what the new brand look like, but I'm going to be more excited when I see how many people are really interested in reinventing their lives. We are in a time now when we all need to reinvent and empower who we are. We cannot sit around and wait for the system to do it for us. We must do it for ourselves. And I know next Tuesday is the election, and I'm encouraging everybody to go out to the polls. Don't sit around and say, well, it's not going to make a difference if I go. Yes, it does make a difference. So I encourage you to go out on November 6th and vote for the issues. The issues, ladies and gentlemen, that is most dear to your heart. Now, as I tell the families that I work with through the Commission on Children, when you go out there to have your conversation around politics, I want you to focus on the party and the representative who has your interests at heart and your children's future at heart. It's not supposed to be, well, my father and my great-grandfather supported this party, therefore I'm going to do that. No, no, no. You are a new individual, and you need to make your educated choices as to the issues that impact yours and your family. So with that being said, I encourage everyone to go out there and let your voices be heard by casting your vote. And as always, you know, if you're looking for a coach to help you to reinvent and empower and transform the person that you deserve to be, you need to reach out to me. You can either email me at dynamicdaphne1@gmail.com. You can call me at 203-794-6208. Or for those who are calling from overseas, you can call 1-866-337-3945. So that is my, I have two more things I need to talk about. I want you to keep your eyes open because one book I'm going to be part of, Mission Unstoppable, is coming out next June. And the Lifestyle Awakening will be coming out before June. So keep your eyes open for my two new books. So that's it for me now. I will go and I will bring on my honored guest, Miss Barnes. How are you?
Hi, Daphne. Good morning. I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. How did you make out with Sandy in Basel?
Honestly, my daughter and I are truly blessed. We did not lose electricity. We're warm. We cooked. We did nothing for 3 days. It was wonderful.
Beautiful.
Plenty
beautiful.
Of food, plenty of water.
Yes, God is good, Tanisha, because last night I was online, and the house director next door to me, I saw her posted that, oh, she's so happy they got their lights back. And I said, wow, right next door. So I said, God, I always know I'm special to Daddy, but this is Sandy. It's just an affirmation that he delivers so long as we let him know that we are trusting him. So I'm blessed. You know, I went into town this morning, and from home, it didn't take me long time to get there because there were no traffic on the road this morning. And I took the back roads and there were no trees down. So it is indeed a blessing. So I am so thankful that I have you on the show this morning.
Today, thank you so much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure because we are in a time when people, all gender, all ethnicity, all culture, has to step back and said, what am I going to do differently? So it comes to a time when everyone has to reinvent what they're doing. Their careers, their relationships, and their life. But a lot of people chose not to take action, and they sit around and they point fingers instead of doing that. So after I have you introduce yourself, and you can tell the listeners as much as you want them to know about who Tanisha Barnes is. What makes her tick, and, you know, where were you born and all the juicy stuff, you know.
I'll try my best. Well, my name is Tanisha Barnes. I am the proprietor of T. Barnes Beauty LLC, which is a beauty brand that houses a very small and intimate hair and aesthetic studio. I'm a licensed esthetician in New York and certified in Connecticut. I also have a skincare line called T. Barnes Skincare. And then we also have a meetup group, and the meetup group does various activities. I have this year coming, 2013, we'll be having two really wonderful retreats for women to deal with.
Can I stop you a minute, though?
Sure.
Before you go into all of that, I want you to tell the people who you are. Because before you were doing all these wonderful things, you had a beginning. Remember our conversation today is around reinventing. So before you stepped out on all these glorious platforms, you had a beginning. That's why I tell you, tell the people who you are, where were you born, and all of that good stuff. And we are going to get to all of the other stuff.
Okay,
as we go on, yes.
I was born in Austin, Texas, and I grew up traveling a lot. I grew up with a father who was in corporate America, and we moved all over the place, from Texas to L.A., L.A. to Connecticut, Connecticut to Arizona, Arizona back to Connecticut. I moved to New York for NYU for undergrad. I moved to Italy. I did Russia. So I've really lived a lot of different places, and all of those experiences pretty much kind of created who I am today. And we're talking about reinvention. And the interesting thing is that I've never really had a problem with reinventing, because I've never really thought about it that way. I'm fundamentally, I've always been Tanisha Barnes, and I've never ever really, and I mean, that person, Tanisha Barnes, is a collection of all of her experiences, and really a product of a very grounded family and foundation. I have two parents that have been together since the ninth grade. I come from a legacy of family on both sides, and that has always been who I was. So when it came time to switch careers or do something different, I was never really qualified my value as a human being based on what I was doing at that moment. So transition and reinvention really came pretty easy for me.
And that's powerful. I just like what you have said so eloquently, because the way you have laid out your childhood into adulthood, it's like oftentimes tell my clients and tell my listeners, life, each and every day you wake up, you're in school. You don't need to go into a classroom, because the minute you walk outside your door, you are in school. As you traveled the globe, you were in preparation for the final plateau of who you have come to be.
Exactly.
And I noticed, and even in general conversation on the phone, you always say you have a little this and a little that, and a little this and a little that. And I would love to be bold enough to ask you to change the word little to unique.
Because I like it.
If you consistently saying it's little, little it will remain.
Well, you However, I've thought about that from a variety of perspectives. And recently, I think it was my friend Ellie told me that the Dalai Lama had said, we don't need a lot of big people or one person doing really big things. We need a lot of little people doing a lot of little things. And I thought, for my life right now where it stands, that's really significant for me. I've never thought about anything that I did as small in terms of the impact, but small in terms of I do what I can do within my means, within my what I have. And that has always really been okay with me. You know, I've never needed to have a 3-car garage. I've never had these huge dreams of grandeur, although they kind of come. It's interesting how those things kind of develop on their own. But for me, I've just always wanted to do what I did really well.
However, when I say little,
I really mean it, not necessarily in terms of believing that it has little impact, but small in terms of I do what I can manage to do for people around me in the community that I can impact.
Right.
And that's a very small radius right now.
And what I'm looking at, your subconscious, little is little to your subconscious. Your subconscious is not taking the time to break it down the way you do. And what you're doing, you need to hold in mind that it's not about Tanisha. It's about all the people you serve, whether you're serving 40 at a time or you're serving one at a time. It's the impact that you are doing to help that individual transform his or her self. So when the universe is ready and, the universe is saying, it's time for me to really quadruple what T. Barnes is up to in Asia, in Africa, in the West Indies, all over the place. If you are seeing yourself as a servant who is here to serve others, you'll have to take up the baton and you'll have to follow suit in what the universe provides for you.
I'm ready, Daphne.
You know, so it's just...
Whatever it serves up, I'll be ready for.
Right. Because I know as women, and we are so humble, and because there's so much power in our words, and the words that we put out there, they are what manifest. And with all due respect to the Dalai Lama, you need to understand in his environment, what does small mean? If you have so many, how many million, small in that environment is nothing in comparison to what we saw. And as you have that topic on the table, I read the article about his visit, and I must applaud the community for coming together in such a mighty way to fund that event. It would be a wonderful thing if all the other things in the community that needs their support, they would also come together in this fashion. Because the dollar amount was powerful, and that is to show me that there is not an impact of recession, as people are saying. There is more of a hoarding of resources.
I agree.
So with that being said, when we and you had already stepped on it, when you think of reinvention, I know at one time or another you taught school, and as you look on the word invention, and right now I want to ask you if you could respectfully remove T. Barnes out of this question and answer it based on the fact of viewing or scanning, if you may, our community here, and then if you feel so led to compare it to New York. And what do you think reinvention mean to the people in the greater Danbury area?
That's interesting. Connecticut, particularly the community of Danbury, is a quite fascinating space for me. I mean, I can only talk about it, obviously, from my own perspective. I came here pretty young, and I occupy a space that racially, you know, we have quite a bit of diversity in Danbury, but, you know, African-Americans are still on the lower end of the percentage of what the makeup of Danbury is. And that has dramatically changed, actually, throughout the years. So I occupy a space of being a minority within a community in Connecticut. And then this space also has very vast differences in class. And I grew up in an upper-class African-American community, which spaces you differently. So I'm always really aware of where I sit from a race, class, and gender perspective within this community. And I think because I grew up a particular way and I have the type of parents that I have and I'm from Texas and I'm dealing with a community of people that don't typically understand family and community the way that I do, mm-hmm. it's been kind of difficult for me mm-hmm. to kind of find my footing. I mm-hmm. find that class-wise within our community, we are severely and divided to our detriment as African-Americans. Mm-hmm. And we are divided by class in a way that I see that you grew up in poverty within Connecticut, which is the wealthiest state in the United States, it tends to be cyclical. So people have generational cycles of poverty. Mm-hmm. And then when you are this particular community of class African-Americans, although I see that they are civic-minded on some level where there is a certain amount of, there is a lot of charity, I always find the difference between charity and solidarity. And I think our community mm-hmm. gets it wrong often.
mm-hmm.
So I find mm-hmm. that there's, although there's a lot of charity, there is a solidarity in the African-American community.
Tanisha, repeat. I don't know what happened. What you just said just all went all muffled up.
Would you please repeat?
That's okay. I think maybe it's a phone or something.
What I said is that I find that although there seems to be a lot of charity within our community, there is not often a lot of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And solidarity requires that you understand humanity in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And that you see poverty as a function of a system and mm-hmm. not because people are simply lazy. It also means that if you exist in poverty, that you see success in a particular way. And mm-hmm. I don't define success by finance. So our community is quite difficult.
Yeah. So, and I want to, and well said. Let us look on the younger generation because you taught school.
Yes.
Do you think that the young people, some of them are probably grasping the concept that I can do better and it is up to me?
I think that my generation, and I'm a child of the late 70s,
I'm looking at the younger ones, the ones you used to teach. That was why I asked you to remove yourself.
Those children are lost, and they're lost because generationally, my generation, which is a generation ahead of them, I won't even say two generations. I'm only going to keep it at one.
Right.
Although it may be two, but I'm going to keep it at one. My generation was taught that you go to school, if you do well, that you're going to get a job and you're money and live like your parents. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much if you do these things and this is the formula that you will be successful. And success mm-hmm. was clearly defined by money. And mm-hmm. I think my parents' generation, for everything that they did great and wonderful, my parents gave us a lot in terms of technology and moving forward in terms of African Americans within certain places in society. Mm-hmm. They really failed at continuing the legacy of African-Americans and what we really offered in terms of a historical struggle and mm-hmm. being able to articulate that historical struggle to us so that we then could articulate it to our kids. So mm-hmm. I know that I grew up in a generation where there was a lot of teen pregnancy. And so mm-hmm. you have a generation of her. And identity is such an important issue.
Tanisha, you said generation of, and we didn't hear the next statement after that. So repeat what you said after generation of.
Not sure what I said, but I can tell you that what my goal was to say that we are a generation of a lot of teen pregnancy. Maybe that's where we were. And
right.
with teen pregnancy, so you have a generation of people that were not taught their historical struggle. And that gives
mm-hmm.
you strength. I mean, Jewish people
yes.
know this, right?
Yes.
They teach
yes.
the historical struggle of their people
mm-hmm.
because that strengthens their kids. And I think that my parents' generation were really strong in deciding that they didn't want to burden us. I think it was out of love. We don't want to burden you with the struggles of the past, so we won't
mm-hmm.
tell you anything.
Right.
We will allow for you to go on.
We have a
And I think our kids, the kids underneath us really fail because they're completely lost in terms of a grounded identity.
I'm going to take this caller, and then I'm going to ask you to compare your experience in New York, because you had just laid out Danbury, where you grew up, and I want you to compare that to New York and how you see the difference with reinvention. Reinventing oneself. Hold on. Let me see if this caller has a question. Hold on. Good morning, caller.
Hi.
Your last. Keisha?
Yes. How are you, Daphne?
I am wonderful. I want you to meet Tanisha Barnes. Now, we are wrapping
Good.
Up here, and we're going to leave your line open,
okay.
Keisha.
Okay.
That's my other guest. Tanisha, I want you to meet Keisha. Yes, so when you compare New York to here and look at the reinvention mode, how do you see a difference, if there is one?
You're asking that to me,
yes.
Tanisha?
No, I'm Tanisha, yes.
I don't think that there is a difference. I mean, I
okay.
think that there is a difference in terms of how smaller communities function and urban communities function. And I think that urban communities are even more at a loss because
mm-hmm.
that sense of identity and grounding and that foundational sense of who you are is even more. You have communities,
mm-hmm.
people that were migrants, that didn't have children.
It's interesting that you just said what you just said. A couple of weeks ago, I was privy to be part of a family gathering, not my family, someone I know. And one of the young men from the family now resides in New York City, and he goes to school in New York City. And, of course, he came to the event, classy dressed in a casual blazer, nice colorful shirt and everything. And when he left the event, one of his cousins looked at his uncle and said, "Oh, I forgot. I was wondering why he came so metro," and he used his fingers to do quote unquote. He said, "No, oh, I forgot. He now lives in New York City." So even in your family, people will look and see things that they will use to describe you, to show the difference of when you were in the small town versus the big metropolitan city. Keisha, Tanisha, I'm going to still keep you on and finish our conversation, but I want to ask Keisha to introduce herself, say who she is and where she's from. This is, I think, her second time on the show. But just tell people about your humble beginnings, you know, where you're from, and then we're going to bring you into the reinvention conversation with Tanisha Barnes, and then Dr. Joy is going to join us later on. So introduce yourself, please, Keisha.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say good morning to you both, and
good morning.
Thank you for having me, Daphne. My name is Keisha River Shorty, and I am a coach and consultant and strategist. I primarily work with nonprofits and small businesses through my company called The Cars Group. And
but where are you
Cars.
From, Keisha? Let me stop you before you go there. I asked, Tanisha did the same thing. I asked her to introduce herself, not her company.
Well,
that's why
part
I said,
of the reason
me.
I'm doing it, part of the reason I'm doing it is because who I am is uniquely tied to who I am in terms of my company.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why.
Hold on a minute. I want you to tell people about your humble beginnings first, because especially because we are doing reinvention, a lot of times when people hear first about what we are doing, they kind of throw the towel in and say, oh, no, they're all established. There's no hope for me. So there's a method to my madness here. Okay, so go ahead.
Well, I grew up in Charleston, well, outside of Charleston, in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and is one of those places where if you say you're from Mount Pleasant, people go, what? And if you say you're from Charleston, they know what you're talking about. I am...
Sorry.
Let's see. I'm the oldest and the only girl. I have two brothers that live with us, and I since found out that I have three other brothers I just found out about from my dad's side a couple of years ago. But I grew up not really middle class, not really poor, but kind of in between. And Mount Pleasant, being on the outside of Charleston back then, was still, I lived in a very rural area, and it was kind of like in between. We had a lot of the same amenities and everything as if you lived in a city, but there wasn't public transportation. And I grew up living with my grandparents and around my grandparents, and it was really weird because we had the connection between old and new, because my grandparents still had a chicken coop. They still had the remnants of a working farm. So I would go out, and I wouldn't go to the store to get eggs. We would go to the chicken coop, and I would get eggs.
Beautiful.
We still had. They raised pigs. My uncles were avid hunters, and so they went deer hunting and everything else. So I was in this kind of living in the country and in the rural area, but you know, I would go to school, and there were all of it was in this. It was in the more advanced parts. So you went in and there was a lot going on in school and, you know, and computers and all of this. So I didn't grow up very wealthy. I was the first person in my family to go to an Ivy League school.
Yay!
And I was only the second person to go to a 4-year college. But my family really stressed education, and they stressed making sure that you understood who you are and where you came from, and that you had big dreams and you had goals, and that you could move forward from there.
Can I interject here? And then I don't want you to lose your point. So you see what I am saying now, because we are talking about reinvention, and I don't know whether or not you were listening to Tanisha's introduction earlier on, but Tanisha, as you look back on your introduction now and hear Keisha's introduction, you see how the reinvention comes right into play for people who are listening? Because if you are thinking about a reinvention, hasn't, even before you hear the rest of Keisha's story, wouldn't you say that this woman has reinvented her life? Tanisha.
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? And this is why it's important for us to lay out things for people to really understand, because they are, you know, people have a term to say, oh, they get it overnight, and they don't realize that for some people's overnight is 35 years.
Exactly.
They don't understand that some people too, their overnight is 40 years. So it depends on how long is your overnight. So thanks for allowing me to interject. Continue, Keisha.
Okay. And it's interesting that you brought that point across, because when I introduce myself to people, and it's like you say, typically when you first meet someone, they want to know who you are and what you do in terms of who you are and what you do now. And in the conversations that I have with people, I always tell them about, yeah, this is what I do now, but look at where I came from and look at what I've learned as a result. Because I find that a lot of times you can't connect with people if they don't think that you understand their journey.
That's
I always talk to them about you know, about knowledge and about using information and about being self-sufficient and being self-motivated. But at the same time, I understand that a big part of the reason why I became who I am now is not just because I'm very motivated and I'm very excited and I'm one of these people that, you know, I love to learn and I love to do new things and all of that, but it's because I always had people around me who were constantly saying, I don't want you to stay here. I don't want
that's
you to be,
right.
you know, where
that's
I am. I don't want you,
right.
you know, and my mother was a licensed practical nurse. She was very successful. She was a nurse for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And her thing that she always said was she never went away to college and she always wanted me to do that. She always wanted my, mm-hmm. my brothers to do that. And so her whole thing was she had this, she had this indirect way of encouraging. Mm-hmm.
That's
you know,
right.
when I would
That's
bring my right. report home, my report card home, and I'd have an 88, and I'd be, you know, smiling from ear to ear, and it was this one poignant moment that kept standing out for me.
Mm-hmm.
I came home, and I think I was in second grade, first or second grade,
mm-hmm.
and I had an 88 on a test,
mm-hmm.
and I was pleased as punch because I'm like, hey, it's you know, it's 88, it's a B, and I brought it in, and I gave it to her, and she said, an 88, Keisha, and I went, but that's good. And she just kept saying, an 88?
Mm.
And I said, yeah, but that's good. And she went, yeah, it's good, but how many points could you have gotten?
Mm.
And I said, well, it went up to 100. And she said, okay, so an 88? And and that was it. And I keep remembering that because to
yes.
me, she said, you know, yeah, don't just be happy with the 88. Be happy
mm-hmm.
with getting more than that. And so
that's
as
right.
a result,
so don't set
the
me.
Reason...
Yep.
Exactly. And so part of reinvention is I always tell people, because a lot of times when they say, well, you're reinventing yourself, which means that you're completely throwing out who you were and you're trying
nope.
to be fake. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, no, reinventing
nope, nope,
yourself
nope.
just means that you're taking the best of who you are and you're taking
refining.
All of that. Right. And
right.
refining it
refining.
And growing
yep.
and developing, because it doesn't matter who you try to reinvent or repurpose yourself to be if you're trying to be something you're not. Ultimately, you can only be who you are at your core.
That's right. That's right.
Add additional things to it.
I want
well,
to give.
I want to jump in on that one because
I want to give Keisha, Tanisha, an opportunity to come in on this. Go ahead,
yes,
Tanisha.
I don't think ways. You know, we pretty have we have very different upbringings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you started out where people would say you were climbing your way up, and I didn't necessarily
mm-hmm.
start out that way. But there's a level of expectation that people have on your life, and it's also reinvention is defining for yourself what you think success means, what you think that
mm-hmm.
new life, your life needs to look like. And oftentimes people equate that with material success, with financial
mm-hmm.
success. And so when you already start the running with those types of things, then it becomes a different type of reinvention. And for
mm-hmm.
me, it was really figuring out, I was teaching for 4 years at a private school, and we really didn't share the same understanding of African-American boys, and
mm-hmm.
deciding, what do I do now? Do I continue this path to believe, because I could have gone the corporate route. I mean, I had the degrees and the things that I wanted to do. I could have gone into a public school, but instead I chose to say, what is my best life? And my best life was honing in on my home, creating
mm-hmm.
a little school in my backyard, and creating a small salon in my house. And for people that say, but you have all the advantages that afforded to you, you could go, you could be working at the biggest corporation, you could have a 3-car garage, you'd be making a lot of money. You know, reinvention for me was really starting to say, what is it that I honestly believe about the world? And what are the values associated with that belief? And then creating a life for myself around that. Because I don't like to think about reinvention and success as a ladder that you're climbing to get higher. It really
exactly.
is about creating a life that is meaningful and balanced
can
for yourself.
Can I just interject right here? Because when Keisha mentioned about the ladder and climbing, As a reinvention coach and speaker, when people understand that the ladder they are climbing is the ladder of their purpose and calling, then they don't get sidetracked about all the three car garage and the Eiffel Tower house and or the Empire State Building house and all of that stuff, because they understand about their about their true calling and purpose and know why they're here. And this is why everybody needs a coach and a mentor, because people who don't work with coaches or mentors because they don't think it's important and it does not come on their value scale, that's why they see reinvention as stuff, or they see reinvention as becoming somebody else instead of, there's a lot of disturbance from somebody, I'm not sure who. They see reinvention as tough or becoming somebody else instead of refining who they are called to be. And that's why I just enjoy what I do, because there's a lot of people in this world who has never, ever sat with a coach or have a mentor to guide them to say, well, this is what you need to do. And they really don't have a true understanding about what is empowerment. They don't know what reinvention is. For example, I had a conversation with a woman who is a Christian. And she, when she heard the word empowerment, she think that it means that she's not going to be submissive to her spouse. And she think that a woman who is empowered is not submissive. So there's a lot of conversation that is going around about that. Anybody have a feedback on what I've just said?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in light of what you're saying.
Please say who is calling. Say who is speaking so the listeners know.
This is Keisha, and I believe a good deal of what you're saying. I understand what you're saying in terms of helping people to understand what the definition of the terms are, because everyone comes to the table with their own interpretation of it. And just like you were saying, Tanisha, I agree with you in that there is a redefinition that comes with reinvention, in that quote-unquote climbing the ladder, as you said, Daphne, doesn't necessarily mean climbing the ladder for stuff. It means climbing the ladder to be able to develop and grow personally or professionally. And sometimes that may look different to different people, because I can understand exactly what you're saying, Tanisha, because I went through a similar process where I became a teacher. I was teaching for a number of years, and then I, too, had the choice, do I go into corporate, do I do some other things? And the step that I decided to make in terms of going into business for myself and being a consultant and a coach myself was seen as many as being a step backwards or a step down, which I'm sure is the same thing for you in terms of opening your own school literally in your backyard and doing your beauty products. But part of what we're able to do is we understand that it's not always what other people see our journey to be, but it's what our journey needs to be, so that it's in line with our true selves. And so a big part of reinvention, as Daphne was saying, is that a big reason why people need coaches and mentors and people to help guide them through the process is because the external world puts a very, very high value on monetary things, on status, on accolades, on stuff that you accumulate. I went through Hurricane Katrina, and I was on a roof for 7 days and lost all of my stuff. So I started completely over. I literally walked out of there with the clothes on my back and one change of clothes in a duffel bag. That was it. And that taught me to realize that I've never been materialistic to begin with, but that taught me to realize that it's not about the stuff that you have. It's about who you are inside. It's about what you have and what you bring with you and what you take with you and what you give and what you leave behind. And, you know, Daphne and I have had conversations before where people don't understand that, and they're never truly fulfilled in trying to figure out who they are and where they're going until they really tap into that. And that's why you have people who are looking to, quote-unquote, reinvent themselves by becoming someone different. it's not about becoming someone different. It's about coming home to who you are.
May I say?
The things that are, who you, that are in line with that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Joy just messaged me on Facebook. I think she's running on generator. She's in New Jersey. She's running on generator and something. There's a possibility she's going to try to call in.
Mm-hmm.
However, she may not. She might not be able to. So if she doesn't call in, that's the reason why. So I just wanted to share that with both of you. So it's up to you, you guys, whether you want to continue the conversation, whether she calls in or not. If not, I would just hold the reins. So, yes, and thank you so much. You want to say something about what Keisha just said, Tanisha?
No, I mean, I think she hit it right on the nail, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's beyond ourselves, right? We have to get it. And as adults, you have a responsibility to do whatever it takes, whether it's therapy, whether it's coaching, whether it's whatever, to finally get it. Because
mm-hmm.
we have a responsibility to the children that are behind us
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that we're responsible for raising. And I don't
mm-hmm.
mean our own children directly,
but children
within our whole community.
Community, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but to be able to honestly do that, we have to be coming with the values of community, and we have
mm-hmm.
to be coming with a particular core understanding
mm-hmm.
of what the essentials of life really means. And my greatest fear, and I can go back to what I was saying about our small community, Daphne,
mm.
is that so many people lack, to me, a real clear understanding of what it means to live collectively, what it
exactly.
means to really be in solidarity with one another.
And
so their ability, no matter how much charity they give, to really affect change for the children below us, to really honestly give them an identity that's going to be, you know, what I hear from Keisha is that she grew up with a sense of herself, and that sense of yourself is what allows you to really be successful in life, and success by my definition, not by a ladder's definition.
Each of us have mm-hmm. to find our own success. But before I go back there, the bottom line here is, until each individual come intimately connected with who they are, they will never be able to work together as a community. And this
right.
is why in the community that we are talking about, Keisha up here, I worked in that community for many years myself, and agencies and organizations, everybody is running for the same almighty federal dollar. Instead
mm-hmm.
of coming together under one umbrella and say, let us put it in this pot and let us impact the lives of the people in our community. I worked at, I'm not going to call the name because they don't sponsor my show. However, there was a local agency there that I worked for through a federal grant. And I began certain empowering programs for the residents of that agency. And, you know, some people were glad for it. I brought in banks to do home buyer seminars and all of that, because when I began doing the home visit with these people, I realized that a lot of them were in that situation because they chose to, because they were born into a generation where so many generations had lived through that system. So it is kind of a legacy for them to get accepted into that system. And I said, wake up, smell the coffee. You are here as a crutch. Look at what you're earning. You can afford to live in this neighborhood or that neighborhood or the other neighborhood. And people would tell me stuff like, oh, but then I have to do my own snow. I have to cut my own lawn. And I said, that's the reason why you're here, because of the grass cutting and the snow. So people have to find themselves in order to welcome the greater community in. So I am loving this conversation, ladies.
And how I mean, the only way that people can really do that, and I'm speaking specifically towards the African American community because I've taught kids from various communities.
That's the nation I'm speaking to.
I mean, but historically, you have to know who you are. You have to be deeply connected with your history of struggle, with what your people have made it through to come through. And that's on both ends. You know, people live in poverty, live in generational cycles of poverty, and they choose to stay there for various reasons. The same way that wealthy people live in generations of wealth, but that choose to stay, you know, in particular trains of thought and minds of thought for other various reasons. It really is all the same. One is not worse than the other. Just one group of people, you know, they get to go on vacation and still live stuck. So stuck is living stuck.
Exactly. And they come back and the bills, they don't have to worry whether the bills are paid. So it's it's a combination, because when we look at the history too, that's another crutch that people hold on to and say, well, everybody owes them, and you never hear them say, it's my responsibility to make this turn. So, yes, the history is of value, but you got to decide how you're going to use it. Don't use it as a crutch where you're going to be dependent and have holding people and systems hostage that they owe you. Oh, they owe me this. They got to do this for this. And they, no, nobody owe you. You need to look at the person in the mirror and to take responsibility for that which you are lacking. Keisha, Tanisha, how much more time do you think you will be able to stay into the conversation? I'm sorry.
I have the time, so you tell me.
All right, so you stay. You relax then and keep in the conversation. I want to ask you, after Keisha speaks, I'm going to have you tell the people why you chose to do the work that you are now doing to make a difference in people's lives. But I want to have Keisha continue with, she mentioned about what had happened to her in Katrina, but yet she just reinvent and just move full force, which I think brought her to what she's doing now. So you want to do that, and then we go back to Tanisha. And if Dr. Joy calls in, I will I'll open the line and get her on.
Okay. Well, Katrina was an eye-opening experience for a number of reasons. One, it kind of brings you face-to-face with the prospect of your mortality and the fact that you are human and, you know, everyone expects to live forever, but you never really are faced with the fact that, you know, you might not get out of this or you might not wake up tomorrow. And then you start really looking at what have you done with your life and who have you been and what are the things that you've always wanted to do that you haven't taken the time to do for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so being on a roof and being stuck there for 7 days with water surrounding you and not knowing if you're going to get out, what you're going to do, where you're going to go, and literally having all of the things that were so important to you before in terms of the things and the status and the money and everything else, having all of that gone in one instant was a very humbling experience, because one of the things it forced me to do was to really realize that all of the things that I spent so much time working for, they would be gone in an instant, and what did I have left? And so a big part of what I started doing is, you know, I didn't have any children. I still don't have any children. I had a lot of dogs and cats.
Not yet.
So my thing was I started looking at, okay, one, you know, have I been happy doing what I've been doing? And because I'm a teacher and I'm always a teacher, once a teacher, always a teacher, I was happy teaching, but I wasn't happy in the way that I was teaching and in the place that I was teaching. So, you know, one, I felt like I was kind of in my purpose, but I wasn't really passionate about my purpose. And then two, you know, what was the legacy that I was going to leave behind? Because I always believed that when you invent yourself or you reinvent yourself or you rediscover yourself in terms of who you are and what you're put here to be to accomplish, that everyone has a legacy that you're leaving. And legacy is one of those terms that people throw around and you think, oh, I have a library named after me or a school named after me or a street named after me or I've changed history. No, the legacy that you leave behind is the way that you touch individual people.
Yes.
And if you touch individual people enough to have a school named after you or a building or whatever, great. But as a teacher for many years, and I remember when I first started teaching, I was teaching first grade, and I remember I jumped up out of my sleep. It was like 3:30 in the morning because I realized that the 30 kids that I had in my class, I was molding them into who they were going to be. And that was a huge bit of responsibility that I felt immediately. It was a way, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, because everything that I did, and I taught first grade, so 6-year-olds, they're emulating and repeating and doing everything that you say because you're their model for how they're going to be. You're their model for what they think of themselves, for the beginnings of their self-esteem and their awareness of themselves and their self-determination. And it's like you said, Tanisha, we have to focus on the kids and the messages that we give them because the kids and the message that they get about who they are and their value and who they're what they're able to become, that speaks into the lives of who they become as adults. So we wouldn't have so much stuff that we need to correct with adults if we got it right
with
our kids.
Right.
That's right. Perfect. Perfect.
So it's like all of the things that I was doing, you know, I looked at it and I said, okay, well, what's the legacy that I'm leaving behind? You know, have I touched the people that I really could have touched? And
that's
so
right.
Part of my reinvention process was to reconnect with who I was. And I came up with three simple questions that I asked myself before I decide to do anything or before I decide to take on anything. Is this something that is fueling my passion? Is this something that's lighting a fire under me, keeping me excited about being alive? Mm-hmm. Two, is this something that's in line with my purpose, that reason why I exist, the reason why I breathe, that thing that I can do from sun up to sundown and love it?
Mm-hmm.
And three, is this building a legacy? And is this building the legacy of me touching somebody? Is this building a legacy of me building something? Is this building a legacy of me encouraging someone? But whatever that legacy is that I've identified, is that building it? And everything I do, I ask myself these three questions.
Beautiful.
And I find that my life has been so much better because I take time out of the day. I work for myself. I work from home. But I take time out of the day and I spend some time in quiet reflection. I go down to the pier.
Perfect.
I watch the dolphins. I go for a walk. I spend some time with myself because part of reinvention and reconnection is not moving away from who you are and who you've been and what you're doing, but closer. And as we get caught up in that rat race, we lose connection with ourselves. We don't spend any time with ourselves because, oh, it's the kids and it's the job and even the vacations and the trips and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine, and they're like, it's so tiring to maintain the status because they're always doing something.
Mm.
And I was like, well, when do you spend quiet time?
Time with yourself. And that's right.
Exactly. And we have to nourish that, and we have to teach our kids that sometimes – the best thing that you can do and the thing that is most important is for you to be still and listen to yourself and reconnect with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And before I go to Tanisha, I just want to share something here. I do retreats, and I tell you, you will be amazed to see how frightened and scared adults, women get when I have activities of silence. Like when I do a 3-day retreat, I'll start with like 30 minutes the first day, and then I move up to 1 hour the second day, and then I do 1 hour and 15 minutes on the third day. And people are losing their minds. They have the instruction, and people who are rarely doing what the activities tell them to do, other people will try their darnest to disturb them out of the activity. And once we do the circle and to get the feedback, a lot of these women have never been quiet. And so for them, it is so frightening, and they cannot see themselves just be quiet for 30 minutes, much less an hour, much less an hour and 15 minutes. It's like you're taking them to the gallows to put an end to their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I say, well, once you get home, start with a mere 5 or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are going to love it. Because it adds so much energy and value to who you are. And that's why a lot of women, because I wear that costume so I can speak from that, that vantage point, that's why a lot of women are in relationships that's not adding value to them, because they don't love themselves. And they
right.
don't care about who they are. They are mm-hmm. afraid to be with themselves. And we got to begin to love who we are and appreciate. Miss Tanisha, so
yes.
now it's your question about, I asked, why you do what you do.
Well, I think, like Keisha, reinvention comes when you are stripped of everything you thought you were. And for me, that came with, you know, motherhood, however wonderful it was at that point equally as devastating. You know, I was left pregnant. I was going to be a single mother, and that was not at all the vision that I had of my life. I couldn't have even, if you would have asked me that, I mean, that was the last thing I could have ever thought would have been my experience. And that tripped me of self-worth and everything that I thought I was in life. And so, you know, the true testament to your character is when you're at that bottomless, at that point where you don't know who you are, and really figure out who you are, becoming a. And from that moment that I found that I was pregnant and that I found out I have to do it by myself, I became so important to me. And this life that I was bringing into the world. And so it really started with, you know, moving back in my market, closing a. I mean, I really completely reached and I went back to grad school and got a major, a master's in history, and then went on to enough social justice and became a teacher. And for 4 years. And interest and experience. So not only did I have these powerful desires to be a parent and to really want and desire for my everything that she could, but I fell in love with these boys that I was teaching. And because they came from different backgrounds, you know, many of them did not have that sense of identity, did not have that sense of grounded, stable family structures that I had, and I could see how it was killing them and creating this space of just indifference, you know. And so this passion for children and motherhood that just completely changed my perspective on how I saw the world. Mm-hmm. And teaching was really fulfilling for a time until I saw that teaching within certain environments, when you know what kids need and when you've had it and you become restricted to be able to give them what they need, then you have to figure out, well, how can I do what I do in different ways?
Mm-hmm.
I faced being fired. And that was another, like, I mean, the good thing is that firing never really scared me. I always knew I could make my own money. I've had a business since I was 17. So that didn't really come with that much fear. But what it did is put me in a position, because now I'm a parent, figure out how do I create this new life for myself and do what I do. And so my salon had already, you know, I'd always been an esthetician. I always had a studio. And I had a house. And I was on unemployment. And I'm like, with $330 a week, how do you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm going to take what I have, and I'm going to make it work. And I had a home, and I actually built out every square inch of the house that I owned to accommodate my salon and to accommodate my school. And people are often like, well, those things are so weird. How do you work with beauty and education? And one thing I know about being a mother is that you can't have healthy children without having healthy mothers.
That's
and
right.
You
That's
just can't.
Right.
I mean, it's just not a possibility. And one thing I learned about motherhood, coming into motherhood in such a painful way, is that I created these really amazing relationships with other mothers who were hurting. And I did a film, and I really used this time period to heal by helping and healing other women. And so what I realized is that this was just a natural state of things. You know, I did my appointments for women, and those times that I'm doing a facial or that I'm doing, you know, working with a client or that someone else is, it's beautiful. We're exchanging honest communication, you know, it's a space of healing. It's very small and intimate. So that's when I say it's small in terms of space, but it's impactful in terms of what I believe people leave feeling when they leave my salon.
And people can
my
be
mother,
vulnerable. They don't have to be having their guard up and you know, they know
exactly.
It's safe.
It's an honest, and safe space. And I'm not,
that's right.
There are people that are that hide themselves. I'm not really shy about hiding my pain, hiding my experiences. I work through my things out loud. I write about it. I always tell you, I'm never going to die of cancer I'm never holding all that stuff in. If I'm hurting, you're going to know it, and you're going to go through it with me.
Whether you like it or not.
And you know what? It works for me.
If you don't want to hear it, you can keep stepping.
You know what? The interesting thing is that having that level of comfort with myself to be in pain out loud has really opened up this door to where other women that are in pain, that were suffering silently, because in our community specifically, people tell us, they tell us things that aren't true. They tell us that, you know, you're Black woman, and you're supposed to be able to take on the world, and you're supposed to be able to do these things without support, and it just isn't the truth.
You know, these women they keep hurting because it's out of shame and guilt.
Yes.
So this is why we as women must encourage and mentor each other, because people are dying of all those many diseases, Keisha, because Tanisha. Because they keep keeping in the stuff because people tell, oh, you're going to bring shame on the family. You're going to bring shame on the... Oh, no, I'm bringing healing to myself.
Healing to others. Oh, and it's this beautiful transition. Like now that, you know, and when I said I was going to build this school, people were like, I mean, really, they thought I was a crazy woman. And I often get the label of being militant, but I really know the value of history.
Mm-hmm.
I heard what you said, Daphne, able to be used as a crutch. Anything in your life can be able to be used as a crutch. But historical content and historical knowledge of struggle is what strengthens you. And I always believe that. And being aware from a very early age of systems and how systems work against you or for you is a very important tool to know, not to be used as an excuse for not succeeding, but to be used as a tool of education so that you can bypass all of those systems that are looking to hinder you. And so for me, understanding historical struggle, maybe because I'm a historian and I'm biased, but...
No, but you're not biased, but it's very important. And this is why I tell my clients, instead of focusing on overcoming your adversities, why don't you dissect the adversities and begin to learn the lessons in them so you can use it as part of your reinvention and empowering process? Because, you know, men talk to each other, whether they do it during the ball game or something. Tanisha got disconnected. I'm sure she will call back. Or they are doing it in the bar over a drink. Men talk about these things. But, again, because of the pride and ego, we and the shame we women encounter, we do not speak about it. So I'm praying that Tanisha will call back in. Keisha, why don't you use this time to elaborate on reinvention in whatever way you want to?
Well, part of in the conversations that you and Tanisha were just having about how you have to understand the past and where you came from in your history, and also that you have to embrace the adversity that you're going through so that you can learn from it to be able to use that, is a big thing that I teach with the clients that I work with in explaining to them that you shouldn't be ashamed of whatever struggle that you're going through. You shouldn't be ashamed of whatever things that happened to you, because every experience that you have, everything that you go through, is part of that process that helps to mold you. It helps to develop you. It helps you to become better than you were before. Mm-hmm. Now, if you keep making the same mistakes and you don't learn from it, and you just, you know, sit there and wallow in self-pity, and you don't try to move forward, then that's something different. But
that's
everything
right.
that you go through is part of the reinvention process, because learning overall and education is so key, because it helps you to reinvent. It helps you to become better. It helps you to expand what it is that you do and how you go about doing it and how you allow people to treat you and how you treat yourself. The acronym for my company is it's Knowledge Always Reigns Supreme. And information is static, knowledge is dynamic. You can have a whole bunch of information. With the internet, you can find out anything you want to know. But unless you apply that and use it, then you don't have true knowledge.
And our
problem has been, and I know you've seen this with the clients that you work with, they may have the self-help book, they may have the coaching program that they subscribe to, they may have somebody that they pay and go take a class or go to a conference or go to a seminar. But until they take that information and truly apply it and turn it into real knowledge, they don't go anywhere.
Well,
they
Keisha,
don't get any better.
Keisha, you just used the right statement. You said they have it because that's all. They possess it on their shelves. They don't read it. They don't listen to it.
Exactly.
And that's why everybody just have it. You know, I myself, you mentioned about our experiences. Right now, there are some family members on my mother's side of the family who have not been speaking with me for a couple of years. I was on somebody's television show, and the gentleman asked me about what it was like. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tanisha, for calling back in. The gentleman asked me what it was like growing up poor in Jamaica. And I shared what it was like for me. And some of my mother's family heard the interview on YouTube, and they are upset with me because I disgraced the family on the internet. And I said, it's my story. That's my experience I shared.
Exactly.
You cannot strip me from my experience. It is who I am. And I said, if I had that to do again, I would not have changed anything, because the woman I am becoming is a collaboration and of all of my experiences. I want to remind people that they can call in 646-915-8166. Were you through with your thought, Keisha? You were talking about your company.
Well, part of it is it kind of goes into the fact that when I became a teacher, I was always, when I was growing up, it was one of the things I was always doing. I was always playing school. I was always trying to teach people how to do things. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I went into corporate America. I went into working for other people. I was still always teaching other people. So I always tell people, I'm a teacher. First and foremost, that's what I do. And so part of this whole reinvention process and part of this whole this idea of getting people to understand where they're coming from and where they need to go is to educate them on the fact that just because you possess the information, just because you subscribe to the latest, you know, the latest journals, or you're on a blog or you follow whatever, just because you have the information, that doesn't mean that you are a part, you're actually actively taking part in the transformation that you need to do.
That's right.
So
you must use it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So everything that I do with my clients, it has to do with what I call reflective process, reflective practice. I want you to think and be still enough to think about not only what you're doing and how you're doing it to make it better, but I want you to think about the reasons why you do what you do. Because a big part of the reason why we respond to things the way we do and the way we and why we repeat the same patterns and the way we feel the way we feel is because of inherent things within us that we need to get to know and we need to adjust and we need to deal with. And until you face who you are and you're honest completely with who you are and you know who you are, then you're not going to be able to move forward and you're not going to be able to take that information and turn it into dynamic knowledge by doing something with it. Because like I always say, knowledge always reigns supreme. Exactly. And they're terrified of it because having that, and I always call it the mask syndrome, because especially as women and black women, oh, you're supposed to be strong. Nobody's ever supposed to see you cry. You're and if you, I mean, you were considered weak or a failure or whatever if you didn't, you know, if you let anybody know you needed help. And there was a saying that, you know, I was watching a movie one time, and this line from the movie just jumped out at me. It said, saying that you need help does not mean you fail.
Weak. That's
right. It means that you have people around you who can help.
That's right. That's right.
And we're taught that we're all in this by ourselves. Yeah, you come into the world by yourself and you leave by yourself because you're the only one that's born. You're the only one that dies when it's time to go. But throughout the whole process of living, you have to connect with yourself and connect with other people in a way that's real. And if
that part of it is where if we were honestly connected as African Americans to our history and to who we are as human beings historically, that part of ourselves would have never been lost. It's
that's
our struggle
true.
To
that
be American
true.
That has really caused us to believe that this is an individual life we're living, that this is something that it's a pursuit that you're doing for yourself or for, you know, your own glorification. And that just isn't the nature of what African Americans are about as human beings. You know, we are a collective and communal people. And every time empires have come up and other types of ways of living have come up, it's come with a lot of devastation and a lot of pain. And, you know, for me, that is such an important part of, you know, it's more than just figuring out how to be your best self. It's changing the paradigm of how we all live as human beings. And unfortunately, as Americans, we believe that that capitalism and this way of climbing the ladder and associating success with material, you know, that is the only way human beings have ever lived and that is the only way that we have as an example to exist. And the fortunate thing is that it isn't. There are tons of ways to exist. And the ways that haven't existed before, we can invent them now.
Before you carry on, I want to interject here. Because as a black woman who came here from the West Indies, Tanisha, I respect what you have said. However, I have experienced so much separation in African American towards people who are from other countries, because they see, oh, but you are black from Jamaica and you are black from this place, instead of pooling all the resources together and said, yes, although we came from a different culture with a possibility of different experiences, but collaboratively, this experience can be put to good use to impact our people. So they would label like, oh, those Jamaicans, they're working so much jobs. And there's
that's a lack of understanding of history. I mean,
Hold on. Let me just finish my thought here. So I think that if we can come together as a people and learn each other's history, then we will better be able to come to a compromise. And we will understand the importance of disagreeing on something, yet we would not be disagreeable when it comes to the cause to which we are working towards. So although you are saying that African Americans love to collaborate. I think they love to collaborate with themselves.
I didn't say that.
Okay, what did you say? You're surprised.
I said that the history of African people, and I mean,
okay.
I studied at the University of West Indies. I understand African people as a part of a diaspora. I don't separate the experience of Jamaicans
right.
from the experience of African Americans because they're quite similar, you know, quite similar.
All right, so I apologize.
I don't believe that African Americans are trained to be collaborative because they are disconnected from who they are culturally. And, I mean, all of us, all over the African diaspora, all peoples that were taken from Africa, I believe, have this disconnection from, you know, what we could be collectively as human beings. I don't think that African Americans feel like they want to be collaborative because I think they've been raised within an environment in a country that doesn't believe in the collective spirit. What I'm suggesting is that we have an opportunity and a responsibility because of our legacy that we should be the forerunners in figuring out and showing the rest of society how we might live together differently. And that speaks to me to reinvention because it's more than just this individual reinvention. We are at a time, and you said it at the beginning of the show, where spiritually, as human beings, there is a desperate need to change the way that we relate to each other as human beings. And that's beyond race, you know.
Exactly.
And because of that, it becomes something bigger. But I believe that African people, period, across the globe, are at the best, because of our history of struggle, we are at the best place to be able to be the leaders and the forefront of that struggle. And so whatever it means for us to transition as people, as humanity, we should be embracing the idea of the collective in a very different way. And it scares me when we cling on to these ideas of a ladder of success being material and we emulate rather than create. And I mean,
exactly.
That's really what I'm trying to do is to create something different. You know,
exactly.
I have that comes to my backyard because I'm creating something that is different. Mm-hmm. You know,
and this is
and that's
important. This conversation at this time is extremely important because this vision and this mission will probably for another 5-6 years does not attract thousands of people. However, those of us who believe that it must happen will begin the legacy, and hopefully we will attract some people. So in case we transition before long, that people believe in it and will take on the task of having it fully manifest. And I go back to the event at WestCon. I'm hearing some disturbance. I don't know. And people came out together. They had a large amount of people at that event. It was not a ball game. People came out for a spiritual experience. And that was amazing to see that this happened in this community. And for us, who have the interests of this community at heart, to said, just keep doing what you are doing and embrace those people who get the message and keep moving on.
Right.
We have 27 minutes remaining, so we are going to take this time to summarize. If Dr. Joy calls in, well, we will we'll take her. However, we are going to use this time to summarize. I want to start begin with you, Tanisha. Please summarize your thoughts. Give the high points that you want to leave the listeners with. Give out your contact information, how they can get in touch with you, and tell them what you are looking to do. I want to give you 10 minutes to do that.
Oh, I don't think I need 10. So my name again is Tanisha Barnes. My business entity is T Barnes Beauty LLC, and you can reach www.tbarnesbeauty.com. We do have a small hair studio that focuses on African American hair and an aesthetic studio which services all and has excellent organic skincare line from the T Barnes Beauty collection. And we are having a Solace, it's called the Solace Lifestyle of Beauty Meetup, and it's a group, and we have amazing activities. We'll be doing once a month something called Cocktails and Conversations. It's going to happen at a local venue called Bash. And every month we'll be talking about, we'll have, it's basically kind of like a girls' night out, but with an action attached to it. It'll be a workshop where you will listen to a speaker speak on various topics, ranging from beauty to mental health. And there's a 30-minute action-based project that each person will be responsible for as they leave. So you'll come in, you'll shop, you'll get to hang out, there'll be cocktails, there'll be all of those things, but you'll really walk out with a plan of action for your life, and that is what's going on with T. Barnes Beauty. On the other end of the spectrum of my life, I have a school that's called Beyond the Surface, Critical Thinking and Social Justice Academy. I literally started this in my backyard with 400 square feet worth of space. But we are taking enrollment, and we now have about 20 kids enrolled in the program. We offer Spanish classes, history courses, and critical thinking courses. And it's really amazing. I watch kids and parents drop off, and they come to my backyard, and we have class. And these are kids that have parents who are motivated for them to learn, and students who are there for because their parents are motivated, they are motivated to learn, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch children really want to engage in education. And the mission of Beyond the Surface really is to provide critical education that has inclusive content, that causes kids to develop critical thinking skills, to think beyond the mythology of what people like to put forth as education, and really get deep down and dirty with what historically has honestly happened within our society, and ask the question of students, how do you want the world to be? Are these things that you want to happen again? And these classes are not just for African-American students, they're for all students, because we all have to ask ourselves, is this the way that we want to live? And if we don't, what are creative ideas, and kids are full of creative ideas for what we can create and how we can see the world differently and how we can relate to each other differently. And these two projects, my business all, you know, is in my home. And at the core of that, I get to be a mother, and I get to make my kid breakfast in the morning, and I get to be there to take her to school and to pick her up. And it's really created this amazing, collaborative, peaceful, balanced life for me, and I'm extremely happy with the choices that I made. And I struggle sometimes, and financially it's not always the easiest choice, but that's growing and changing too. So I have total confidence that that will continue to grow. And anybody that wants to be involved with Beyond the Surface, you can go to www.beyondthesurfaceacademy.org. We're also on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook and keep up with the activities that we have going on. And if you want to register your kids for any of the courses, please feel free to call 203-648-8074. That's
my spiel. So now I want you to summarize your conversation. What are the bullet points you would like to leave the listeners with?
I'd really like for people to reconsider success in very meaningful ways. Reconsider the way that we're choosing to live as human beings in relationship to each other, to reconsider that, and to create and be creative around ways that we might be able to better live together that would be equally as fruitful, but even more balanced, even more peaceful. I'm really excited at the idea that we are transitioning. I think everybody feels it. The weather is changing. Things are changing. And we should change with it, and we should change for the better, and we should take it on with a vengeance and not be scared of it, and to simply ask the hard questions. And asking the hard questions is not always easy, but it's imperative.
Beautiful. And you can still hang around, because knowing you as well as I do, you're going to have something else to say later on before we finish. Keisha, I want to allow you to continue with your conversation because you came on a little later than that as planned, a little later than Keisha, than Tanisha.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
go ahead.
What do you want to know?
As you look, you work with college, you work with entrepreneurs, and as you look on the reinvention system, and there, for each and every one of us, it needs to be unique because we have to see first. I just like the three questions that Keisha asked. Keisha, you know, how it applies to your passion, your purpose, and your legacies, I think you said. And I think each of us need to design our own questions. These are great for you. They might not be great for me or for Tanisha or for the next person. But as you look on the population that you serve, what does reinvention look like in that space? Are you outside? I think that's disturbing. Okay. Are we going to do our best to quiet that? All right, go ahead.
Pretty much the way that it looks with my clients, and I work with people, like you said, entrepreneurs or people who want to start their own business. I work with people who want to start a nonprofit or have a nonprofit. I work with individual people who just need assistance with trying to get wrap their minds around living their life and creating changes in their life to decide if they want to start a business or if they want to start a nonprofit or if they want to just try to be the best that they can at what they do in their job. But one of the things that I found is that everything, regardless of which questions you ask, and for each person, I always tell them, I said, you know, the three questions I ask myself are around passion, around purpose, passion, purpose, and legacy.
Keisha,
the three questions.
I think Dr. Joy is calling in. Can you just mark where you are? Caller,
yes.
Good morning. Your first three digits are 704. Is this Dr. Joy?
No, it isn't.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have a question? Would you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
This is Dana Sigberry in Charlotte. I don't have a question. I was actually just tuning in.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead and listen. Okay, we'll mute your line. You touch number one if you have a question.
Okay, I'm just checking Keisha out today.
Okay.
But one of the main things that I always tell people is that with regard to everything that you do, you need to look at who it is that you are at your core, and you need to decide where you want to go. And it's what I call creating that mind movie for yourself of picturing in detail. And you hear a lot about vision parties and about people getting pictures that they put up and say, this is my goal and this is where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people, you need to see it in action. You need to play it out. You need to see it in full color. You know,
that's right.
Think about it, smell it, hear it, see it,
taste it,
and then write it out. Not just get the pictures that you get out of a magazine or you download, but the physical act of writing out your story does a lot to help you connect with it. Because
that's
until
right.
you connect with your story and who you are and where you want to go, then you don't know what to do from there. And
that's
so
right.
after you write it out and you've connected with your story, then I do what you call deconstruct to reconstruct. And a lot of people say, well, I don't have that. I don't have the money. I don't have the resources. I don't have this. So if you picture yourself like I did, I pictured myself and I saw my movie. I was a published author. I had my PhD. I had a school that I'd wanted to start since I first started teaching years ago. And so I wrote down the elements of my movie. I wrote my script. And then from there, I said, okay, if I want these things, what do I need to get that? And I said, okay, if I want this, what do I need? And I started writing it down. And I deconstructed in terms of breaking it down step by step. And now I have an action plan of what I need to do based on deconstructing it. And I know that everything that I do, everything that I follow on my action plan, goes forward to helping me achieve that ultimate goal and having that picture that I have in my mind, having that be something that becomes a reality. And so
Keisha,
as a result...
May I stop you? I want to check to see if this is Dr. Joy.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. Your last three digits are 2274. Would you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Hi, Dr. Daphne. This is Dr. Joy Ohio.
Hello, Dr. Joy.
Jersey, with the
listen.
Storm. How are you?
We are wonderful. I wanted to meet Keisha.
Hey.
And Tanisha. Mm-hmm. Oh, we are so happy that you got the time to call in. Just stick a pin where you are, Keisha. Let's give Dr. Joy a minute to chime in here. We send you energy, my sister. I hope you haven't got too many damages over there in New Jersey.
No, we're good. We're good, and so we only lost two trees. But the thing is that we don't have our area doesn't have any power. So
okay.
I'm on a generator, which is borrowed time. So
okay, so all right, we're going to let you speak. Tell the people who you are, and you know how your humble beginning start, and then tell them your thoughts on reinventing one life because reinventing their life, their career, or their relationships.
Oh, well, let me tell you. Okay, I'm Dr. Joy Ohio. I go by Dr. Joy. I produce and host my own television show, The Dr. Joy Show, Your Prescription for Total Wellness. My business began in 2005, very shortly after I was laid off from corporate America. And let me tell you, June of 2005, that day, I think it was June 21st, 22nd, I can't remember exactly, was one of the happiest days in my life. I say one of the happiest days, all right, because I have a lot of blessings to be grateful about. But when that happened, I was given the opportunity to actually sit down and take time to figure out what I really wanted to do. Somebody may say, well, who gave you that opportunity? Well, my husband sat down and said to me, he goes, yeah, you know what, take the whole summer off and figure out really what you want to do. And it didn't take me that long. I'm a sprinter by nature. That's track and field for those of you that are listening. And I do things relatively quickly. I sat down and I figured out, okay, I want to be able to work out, look good, not get dinged for not looking my age, and be able to also help other women do the same. So with that said, I was able to, start my business and buy a women's health club. So that's how my business started. Since then, it has grown by leaps and bounds, where I'm actually communicating not just to women, but everyone, the mass, on how to take care of themselves. And to begin, at, you know, wherever you are in your journey on this path of achieving total wellness, just start, and it will continue. So
Dr. Joy,
I am a motivation. Yes.
I want you to tell them your story. You told them you pick up from you got fired. But I tell you, the first time you and I met, your story is what connected me to you, where I can now call you friend and colleague. But let the people hear, because they need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So tell them the beginning
of the story happened, yes. I was let go, and then I opened the health club. But it wasn't that easy. I mean, somebody can... try to connect the dots now, but it wasn't that easy. You have to have a plan. Mine started with a passion.
Hold on. Can I stop you? Before you buy the health club, something unique happened in that position that you were in, that part of the story. Before you decide that you was going to really just go.
Oh, okay. Are you talking about from a relationship standpoint? That part?
No, you are in a very good quote-unquote job.
Oh, yes.
That part of the story.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was in, I was an executive for financial services. So in terms of my salary, it was, what people would consider good. Now I look at that number totally different. Because it might have been good then, but it was okay, I really wasn't getting the maximum benefit of how money actually works for you as a person, okay? It mm-hmm. works for you best when you're in business. All right, but I think a lot of times we get caught up by being in corporate America and, ooh, you know, I have this salary. But when you step out on faith and go into business, then you're pulled in different directions, but you, that's where your money really works for you. But you have to keep it going. All right, so I think what Dr. Daphne is wanting me to discuss is how was I able to jump from corporate America into my business relatively quickly. Is that what you want me to discuss?
I remember when we met in D.C.
Tell me what you shared.
You don't have to give the whole story, because there was a dialogue going on with you and the people in that company. And even before your husband tell you to take the time off and to sit down, you know, yes, you had believed in yourself, and you look back over your high school and what you did, and you mentioned briefly that you were a sprinter and all of that.
Right.
You remember the conversation that was taking place in that corporate America before you went home, and your husband said, well, just take the summer and decide what you want to do?
No, I can't. Well, I mean, I would have to go back. That's like 7 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But, but I'm thinking that it could have been negative comments that were thrown my way.
Yes.
That's where she's going.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I'm sorry, listeners. And I don't want to dwell on the negative comments, because I have moved so far past that. But the bottom line is that, with my husband's support, I started to move forward. What transpired was many times that when you embark on something new, people aren't always with you. They aren't always. I think that's where you're going, right?
Right.
People
and
aren't
the other,
always.
The other thing, I think we have given an opportunity, and they can pick your book up and they'll be able to read
the entire book.
Because the bottom line, and I'm not going to keep pushing you there if you're not comfortable going. However, when they read the story, they're going to see that it's up to you, the decision you make. It doesn't matter what anybody else tells you cannot do and all of that.
Okay,
you have
I see where you're going now.
You have the power within you.
Yes.
Do
which
that
so
which you're capable of.
Which is so true. Okay, I know which part you're talking about.
Okay.
Daphne. Now, quickly, I decided to make the transition, but then once I decided to let people know, I didn't have a lot of quote-unquote friends on my side. I guess that's the part where they were friends with me when I was quote-unquote an executive in this financial services firm. However, when I, once I got laid off, then things changed. Things changed where they thought, I had leprosy, that it was going to rub off. And I think it was part of their ignorance, not knowing what to say. Like I said, it was ignorant on them. But that didn't stop me. I kept moving. So there were people that told me that I was going to fail point blank in my own house, okay? But obviously, that didn't come to fruition. And can I just say this, though? Were mistakes made that, shouldn't have happened? Then, but we all grow from our mistakes.
That's right.
So
that's
I wouldn't
right.
call them failures. I would just say that they were
lessons
detours
learned.
Helping me get to, detours and lessons learned, helping me get to where I am now and where God has plans for me to go further. Because I'm soaring. Am I successful?
Beautiful.
Heck yeah.
That's
Heck
right.
yeah.
That's right.
And I tell
that's
everybody
right.
to keep to find out what their passion is. Do not pay attention to what anybody is telling you.
And to
push forward. That's my
right.
story.
That's right. And I want to give you thank you so much for, committing your generator to calling us. I want to give your contact information, because we have we are 11 something. Okay, we have 11 minutes and something, I think, remaining. Give people your contact information, how to get in touch with you.
Sure.
And then we're going to go back to Keisha to give hers, and Tanisha already did hers. So thank you so much, my friend, for calling in, and be safe.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay. My contact information, the best way to get me, you can go to my website and you can see what I'm all about, and you can see my products. You can see snippets of my show. It's www.c, as in David, R as in red, X as in X-ray, J as in jewel, O as in Oscar, Y as in yellow.com. So it's drxjoy.com is my website. You'll see me. You'll see me talking to you. There's a 3-minute reel there. You'll see my products, my story, how I help people. And, you know, that's what I have. So I am the author of the book, Don't Let It Get You. That can be purchased on the website. And plus, I'm in the other books with Stephen Covey and Kevin Blanchard. And the most recent one is The Glamorless Side of Business, What They Didn't Tell You. No, The Glamorless Side of Entrepreneurship, What They Didn't Tell You in Business. I am a featured author there, and that book launched this year, March of 2012.
Oh, well, congratulations. That one slipped my eyes. I didn't see that. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm going to stay on it. I want to listen to Keisha. I want to listen
to Keisha and Tanisha. Well, you
Tanisha,
have to catch
them.
The archive for Tanisha. Tanisha, you know, finished already. But anyhow, go ahead, Keisha. We have 10
minutes.
Okay,
well, all right. Well, I won't take that long. I
you
just
need
want
to summarize your thoughts and
right.
your contact, please.
Pretty much the in terms of having a conversation about reinvention, it comes from a lot of times most of us decide to reinvent ourselves because we're faced with some type of tragedy or we're faced with some type of life circumstances that tells us that what we're doing is not working, or we're faced with something that says that you're no longer going to be able to do what you were doing. And what I always tell people is that you need to have a sense of, as you're going through life on a daily basis, to constantly keep in touch with yourself at the core of who you are, and to have that reflective time where you take time out to connect with and listen to who you are and what it is that you want to do, because what you started out with may not be what you continue with. So doing that and taking that time, even if it's 5, 10, 15 minutes out of the day, every day, to connect with who you are, write down where you are, what you're feeling, who you believe you are, and who you believe you want to become, and then write out your goals in terms of where you want to go and the things that you want to do, and keep revisiting that to see if you need to change or you need to tweak it so that you don't lose sight of it. And then in terms of being able to actually get in touch with me, I'm on Facebook, but you can go to my website at carsgroup.com, and that's K-A-R-S group.com. And my company is the Cars Group, and I do consulting and coaching. I also do teaching and workshop development and speaking. And my new book, Notes to Self, just launched today.
Oh,
so
congratulations.
Wow.
Thank you. It's a collection of, it's 90 days of self-talk. And so it's a journal. It's interactive. So what I want you to do is when you get the book, every day is a note to self. And you read it, note to self, remember this. And it's a part of getting people into the habit of talking to themselves and listening to themselves. And then there's a series of reflective questions that you ask as a result. So it's a 90-day process. So I have volume one that's out because I firmly believe that everything that happens happens in a season. And every season is about 3 months. So this is your first season. So Notes to Self takes you through the first step of that journey. And it's part of my new program that I've developed called Paperback Coaching, where if you have some people who aren't able to engage in a coach one-on-one or to start the process of working with someone individually, then you can get a series of books and modules that help you to actually take action on that information that you have and turn it into dynamic knowledge so that you can then change your life.
Right.
So those are the things that are going on with me. So you can go to my website. My phone number is 267-626-0600. You can also find me on Facebook. It's Keisha Rivers-Shorty, S-H-O-R-T-Y. And you can connect with me there. Subscribe to my updates. I have notes to self and things that I post every couple of days on Facebook. And I'll be posting notes and information about what's going on. And I just wanted to say I'm extremely thrilled, Dr. Daphne, for inviting me to be a part of this call. I've met two very dynamic women as a result, and I'm excited about watching the things that are going on with all of you and with staying connected. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. And I just I want to remind people who are listening that when you think about reinvention, you often hear the word change. Change does not mean discard. In our lives and in the process of reinvention, there are times when we need to shuffle things around, bring things to the front, put some things to the back, but never think of discarding, because when you discard, you throw away. But when you reshuffle, you reorganize. I want to thank all my guests, Tanisha Barnes, Keisha Rivers Shorty, and Dr. Joy, and for the caller who called in to support Keisha. I honor each and every one of you. This was indeed a dynamic conversation. I want to ask you, each of you on the line, as well as I'm asking you to support me and give this link out, Daphne Clark Hudson Empowers. I am launching a rebranding of what I do. So this is my reinvention platform. We have approximately maybe 10 days to which we go to launch. So we need people to go there. Daphne Clark Hudson Empowers. Insert your email and you will be informed when to when the launch is going to be. I am on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all over the place. I am the new president for the National Association of Professional Women, Litchfield County in Connecticut. So if you're under the sound of my voice in the Connecticut area and you're in the Litchfield County, I want you to visit the website, PAPW.com. Am I right, Keisha? Is that the website? And
NAPW.
Thank you. .com. And look through that and possibly join my chapter here in Connecticut. Again, I honor you women. Please share the link so that other people can listen to your conversation. And I look forward to doing this again. Have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. And for those of you who are here in Connecticut, I'll be doing a holiday show taping at the TV studio on the 14th of November between the hours on 3 to 6. So if you're in the Greater Danbury area, please stop by and be part of my studio audience. I love you, ladies, and continued success in everything that you do.
Call it destiny. Will you let me know? What's the place that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? This way.
believe that he's concerned about me. I just begin to say this by faith to the Lord. And I need you to grab it in your spirit and say this. Thank you for showing me and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord thank you for showing me. Hallelujah. And directing me. Speak to it. My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this name. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this name. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. That I know what I know what I know what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. A strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations.